Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our series, New York 51, Life and Politics in Every Neighborhood, in which we're inviting all 51 members of the New York City Council in this mayoral election year to expand democracy, hear what issues are burning in every neighborhood and the five boroughs, and even have some fun along the way. My guests today are Louis Fiedler from the 46th Council District in Brooklyn and Phil Reed from the 8th District in Manhattan. Councilman Reed, welcome back. Councilman Fiedler, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Good morning,
Louis,
Brian.
How are you?
I'm okay, Phil. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
And the first thing that we're doing with everybody in this series is to get you to put all the neighborhood names in New York City out on the radio. So, Councilman Fiedler, what are all the neighborhoods that exist in whole or in part in your district?
Okay, I'll try and do it from west to east. I have parts of Sheepshead Bay, Garrison Beach, Marine Park, Flatlands, Futurama, Old Mill Basin, Mill Basin, Mill Island, Georgetown, and Canarsie in my district.
And Councilman Reed.
I don't have quite that much, but I have two boroughs. You know, I'm in Manhattan in El Barrio or East Harlem, which is the same thing, and the Upper West Side, but more specifically Mott Haven, Manhattan Valley, rather, and then in the Bronx, Mott Haven. And the special part of my district is all of Central Park.
And Brian, the folks in Bergen Beach would kill me if I forgot Bergen Beach. So.
Do the trees vote, Councilman Reed? Does the pond at 100th Street vote?
You know, there are people who are very particular about what happens at that pond, and I have to pay attention to that.
All right. What's your district like, Councilman Fiedler?
Well, I have a very integrated, middle-class homeowner district. From Canarsie, which is largely African and Caribbean American, all the way west to Sheepshead Bay, which is a white, Jewish, Marine Park, which is largely Catholic, Christian, Italian, Irish. So I have a little bit of everything, except for apartment houses. I have very few of those, so I really do represent a good swath of middle-class Brooklyn.
And Councilman Reed?
Well, my district is predominantly Latino, but in that, you know, even in that context, it's extremely diverse with, you know, every Spanish-speaking country represented, but it is drawn specifically as a Latino district, but particularly as people are moving further and further out of the core of Manhattan. It's about 35% black and at least 15% white.
And you have a few more apartment buildings than Councilman Fiedler.
Well, we not only have a few, the vast majority of it is apartment buildings, but we also have the largest number of public housing units of any district. 40% of the constituents live in public housing.
How does that affect the politics of the district?
Sadly, it affects it in the sense of turnout and vote, participation in community activities. I don't know if its relationship is because they live in NYCHA. I don't know. I think most people recognize that, you know, the more disadvantaged communities also effectively have disenfranchised themselves or are disenfranchised. Whether they've done it to themselves or not is always the question. But it's a struggle to organize in NYCHA developments.
New York City Housing Authority, NYCHA.
Right.
And why do you think that is? Because one could argue that, poorer people have, the government policy has more impact on their lives. Obviously, if they're living in public housing, it does. That they're more affected more directly by what government does maybe than anybody else.
Well, you know, it's an axiom in politics that I think Lou and I both find sadly true that, you know, the people who need government the most vote the least, typically. So I'm not sure that it's specific to New York City housing developments. I don't know. I've spent a long time trying to understand the difficulties in getting those groups of people, even individual buildings, to rally around issues that they have.
Councilman Fidler, how has your district changed most significantly since the last election 4 years ago? The city is changing constantly. Who's coming? Who's going from your parts of Brooklyn? How is life different?
Actually, my district in the last several years has been rather stable. The real demographic change that took place in my part of Brooklyn took place in the Canarsie part of my district over the last decade, when it went from being a largely white, empty nest kind of community to a community where many, many younger families, African and Caribbean American in particular, have moved in. That resulted in the last census in my district having the second largest population, because we got a huge population increase in Canarsie as a home that had one person in it or 1.5 people in it went to 4.5 people because families with young children moved in. And so that's had a major impact on our neighborhood in terms of needs for services for youth, our educational system, on that part of the infrastructure.
This is our series New York 51 on WNYC, in which we're inviting all 51 members of New York City Council in this election year to talk about the priorities of voters in their districts and how the city is changing since they got elected. My guest right now, Phil Reed from District 8 in Manhattan Valley, East Harlem, part of the South Bronx, Louis Fidler, council member from District 46 in all those neighborhoods in Brooklyn that he mentioned before, Marine Park, Canarsie, and a whole bunch of others. Let me get your reaction to some stories in the news right now. Councilman Fidler, the Gifford Miller franking controversy. The city council speaker and mayoral hopeful spent about $1.6 million tax dollars on citywide mailings about the council's budget priorities this spring, all featuring pictures of him. Was this legitimate city business or a campaign mailing posing as business, in your opinion?
I think it was ill-advised and unfortunate. We suffer throughout government, and I, as an elected official from Brooklyn, feel this in particular, a lack of respect and credibility for the integrity of what we do. I certainly would have advised the speaker that this was a project that, by measure of its size and timing, was unseemly. I was asked if I would participate very quickly in a single mailer. I told them I wanted to see it before it went out. The next time I saw it was in my mailbox at home, Brian, and I was a little distressed by that.
That's a similar story to what Councilman Avella of Queens was telling yesterday.
Well, look, I don't want to be piling on Gifford Miller. As I'm sure Gifford knows, I'm supporting a different candidate for mayor.
Who are you supporting?
I was an early endorser of Freddie Ferrer, and I'm very proud of that. Gifford's done a good job as speaker. I'm sure he has a good future in New York politics, perhaps not this year, but in the future. And I think he needs to address what happened here and how it happened.
Does that mean reimbursing the taxpayers, as some have called for?
I don't know, but I think there are certainly answers that have to be given by Gifford Miller and how his staff came to do a mailing of this size in 155 different lots. I think that's the real question. There's a certain naivete to think that people weren't going to ask how this happened, why it happened the way it happened, to suggest that perhaps we broke it up into lots because we could sneak it under the radar screen belies an understanding of how government and the press and politics works in 2005.
What are the lots that you refer to?
In order to avoid the competitive bidding process, the job was broken up into 155 different units. I think, in all probability, not just to avoid the competitive bidding process, but to try and get it below the radar screen as to the size of the job.
Councilman Reed, are you in the same place as Councilman Fidler on this?
No, not exactly. I mean, I have a bit of a different take. I think it's unfortunate, and I think that the line was cut a little bit too thin by the speaker's people. But you know, there's a built-in problem here, one that the budget process finishes right around the very same time that there is this cutoff in terms of when we're allowed to use the franking privileges that we have to get word out to people about what is going on, not only in the council but specifically around the budget process. And so those sort of dovetail right around the 30th of June. So that's problematic. I was very happy that the piece that went out to my constituents that had both Gifford's face and my face on it, photographed, I think spoke very accurately and effectively about the sort of priorities that we have from a budget perspective. And the media, you know, does not give the council equal air when it comes to what the budget negotiations are about. So when I talk to my constituents...
Equal with the mayor?
I hear from them, I didn't know that. When we talk about what priorities we're trying to establish, what the struggle is around the budget, the mayor, you know, went out there to say that he made it sound like he'd restored all the various budget cuts. Councilmember Fidler and I both know that to be a false statement. So I think that the opportunity to use that to give people information about what we're fighting for makes sense. Did they lean too far in the direction of also sending out excessive pieces? I was not in town for the last couple of weeks, so I'm not as familiar with it. And I think there was some error on the part of the speaker's staff. I'm supportive of the speaker, and I do think it's important that we have an opportunity to get our message out. And I am oftentimes concerned that the media has decided on what a story is and spends very little time telling the other side of it.
You know, I just want to say I agree with a great deal of what Phil just said. But I think to the average New Yorker, there's a certain level of cynicism. And yes, the media, you know, feeds that to some degree. People don't want politics as usual anymore. I think we need to move away from some of the things that have been done and that are acceptable. This, to me, was not an error in that it was illegal, but it was an error in terms of proportion and size.
You're right.
You know, $1.6 million of taxpayers' money pays for a lot of things. And there's no question that we have to sit there in frustration and virtual silence when we try to point out that Mike Bloomberg is asking for a round of applause for restoring cuts to things that he cut to begin with. But this is a matter of degree.
Do either of you think that the mayor's personal deep pockets with respect to his reelection campaign is responsible in some indirect way for Council Speaker Miller flirting with the ethical line here, Councilman Reed?
I don't think that's a good enough excuse for it. I do think that we're all extremely frustrated by the level of self-righteousness on the part of the mayor, number one, that somehow, you know, he's pure and there's no politics in what he does with his money. Even though, you know, he gives the Carnegie Foundation $20 million to give to cultural organizations. But that money is distributed at the direction of his deputy mayor, Patty Harris, and his cultural affairs commissioner, Kate Levin. So they're sitting there basically telling the Carnegie Institute exactly who to give this money to. Now, if there's not the real conflict of interest in that, and in quote-unquote, it's anonymous,
that's a
joke.
It's a new wrinkle
so you,
on...
Yeah, it's, so, it's I a mean, new, should you get upset about those things? Absolutely. Does the media, once again, bother to tell people all of that information? Absolutely not. Does that therefore give somebody license as an elected official to abuse another service? No.
It's a new wrinkle on campaign finance.
Rather than scrutinizing, see it again after, you know, the mayor is defeated.
Rather than scrutinizing the mayor for who gives money to him, you're scrutinizing him for who he gives money to.
Yes, and then they're silenced because they're intimidated because they know perfectly well that the mayor is going to give an enormous sum of money, particularly cultural institutions. And so they silence themselves during the budget process because they don't want to upset the mayor. So they come begging to us, but they don't want to join in the chorus that says that we're not funding these things in the manner in which the taxpayers would actually like to see this happen. So is that a corruption of the system? I would argue that it is.
My guests on WNYC, City Council members Philip Reed of Manhattan, Louis Fidler from Brooklyn, in our series New York 51, Life and Politics in Every Neighborhood, in which we're inviting all 51 members of the New York City Council to talk about their district's priorities in this election year. And Councilman Fidler, this whole New York 51 series has been to put issues from every neighborhood on the radio in an election year. But with the new Quinnipiac poll out today, continuing the recent trend of 60% favorable ratings for the mayor, even among registered Democrats, I'm beginning to fear that this election will be seen by most of the media as a fait accompli, and the issues won't get covered. What are the people of your district most concerned about? What do you think is going to drive them to the polls for one candidate or another this year?
Well, first of all, I have a little bit of experience in politics, and I would tell you that 60% approval rating is very soft. I think once you get to the underlying issues, you find that people's level of satisfaction with the performance of city government, which ultimately lays at the mayor's feet, is not there. I think, and one of the reasons why I support Freddie Ferrer, is that the issue of affordability in New York is something that cuts across every family and every ethnic group that's in my district. Whether or not you're a Catholic family from Garrison Beach or an Orthodox family from Mill Basin or a Caribbean family from Canarsie, you're concerned that you can't pay your mortgage, that you're being priced out of all the things that middle-class existence in New York, heaven, you know, help poorer people in the city, but the middle class cannot afford things in New York. They're concerned, I believe, that this mayor has run an administration for developers, not for development. Development is good. We need the jobs. No matter how you feel about the West Side Stadium, no matter how you feel about the Olympics, this administration spent its first 3.5 years with a priority for something that did not ultimately succeed.
And yet his poll numbers have only gone up since the collapse of the West Side Stadium deal.
Councilman that would reflect, I think, $15 million of advertising anesthesia.
Councilman Reed, we only have about a minute left, but priorities in your district? What's driving people to the polls, those who will vote?
Well, I think if there are some answers, and I think they're very difficult ones to come up with about finding what is really the description or definition of affordable as it relates to housing, if you can actually solve that problem, that would drive people to the polls. And I think a sense that we really still continue to need to do better with our education system is what's going to bring people to the polls. I mean, you know, in Manhattan, we have a couple of races. So, you know, the borough president race, et cetera, et cetera. In the other boroughs, you don't. So it's going to be very interesting to see if the Democratic primary is able to generate enough interest to bring out a broader number of people. Freddie brought a huge number of people the first time around. Does that carry over? Does the enthusiasm carry over the second? I don't know.
Are you endorsing Freddie Ferrer as Mr. Fiddler is?
No, I think I indicated that I was supporting Gifford Miller.
Okay, I missed that moment. And that's the last word. Philip Reed from District 8, Louis Fiddler from District 46. Thank you both for being on our series, New York 51.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.